The Blind Spot with Rebecca Skeet and Tiffany Martin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Blind Spot. I am one of your hosts, Rebecca Skeet.
Oh, I thought you were going
to do fillers. Yeah, no fillers necessary. You know, today it's just take me as I am, Mary J. style.
Oh, come on, Mary J. I'm Tiff. Yeah, that's it. Simply Tiff.
And you know, I actually saw a clip the other day from Viola Davis, and she said a whole bunch of awesome things, as she tends to do. But at the end of it, she said, in the end, I was enough. Who knew? And it's so simple, but it's true. Sometimes I do feel extra, I'll give the extra that I feel. And sometimes I don't. And that's fine. Who you are is enough as you are.
Yes, for Mental Health Awareness Month. Like, look at you.
Thank you. May I proceed? Because it's May this month.
We are off.
Or are we on something else? Something different.
Oh, can y'all tell it's morning where we are in podcast land?
It's morning. Morning. I missed the opportunity to say, it's gonna be May. I should have said that.
Yeah, you should have.
There we go. I'm waking up now. Yeah. So thank you for the returning listeners and those who are exposing yourself to excellence for the first time in the medium of our podcast.
What is the show name today?
Today's episode is called Phillip's Head. And we're going to give you a little scenic tour as to how we got there.
You know, I feel like this is the second show where we were talking about we were at a restaurant. Which is, it could be deceiving. Like, we go out to eat all the time, which we kind of don't.
It is necessary to live.
It is. We're out here living in these Dallas streets. Great restaurants. But yeah, we were in the wonderful area of Bishop Arts, brunching it up, as most Dallasonians do, over the weekend. And we were talking about just the state of DEIA, which is diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, which I hate that we just don't call it IDEA, but there's already an act called IDEA. That's neither here nor there. My response to everything that was going on was, yo, screw this. Where my co-host over here, without missing a beat, promptly said,
Phillip's Head. Because, you know, screw. And it's a screwdriver.
Phillip's Head. And yeah, it was like, initiate like slow clap here. I said, you know what? That should be the name of our show. We should talk about it. How DEIA has impacted our lives and so forth. And yeah, here we are.
Yeah, it's good to have conversation with people in general, because it helps you flesh out ideas and talk through things. But when there are frustrations as to lived experiences, things that we're seeing or what have you, it's in that moment, definitely, it was refreshing and encouraging to have a conversation with someone who was as frustrated. And I don't even know what the other word would be there as far as the state of things. What was that?
Passionate.
Yeah, to just care, right? You would think more people would, well, maybe you don't think that more people would care. You would hope more people would care. I've heard it said too, when people break out, you know, okay, I'm against DEI, or they won't say necessarily I'm against DEI, but they'll say DEI is too woke and this, that, and the other. DEI this, DEI that. And the term has been almost four letter worded.
Yeah, minimalized to the acronym.
Right. I heard someone say, and I wish I remember who it was so I can credit them, but they said, instead of saying, oh, I have an issue with DEI, or I don't like it, or it has no place in our corporations or our schools or whatever, say it out loud. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. So you don't like diversity, as you mentioned too, the DEIA, or I've also heard DEIB, B for belonging, or what have you. Either way, we use the acronym because it's easier. But when someone says that they're against it, it's like, let's break that down and say, what exactly is it against? You don't like diversity? Why not? What do you prefer? Uniformity? You don't like equity? Okay. All right. So as a person in your life and in your work and in your household, you prefer inequality? Do you prefer to be the person extending that or experiencing it? Okay. Okay. Cool. Inclusion? You don't like that? You don't like people to be allowed in? What if you were the one being excluded? It's not saying we want these things for one particular group. It's for everyone. And so I think if people were to take the time to internalize that and say, how do I feel about being allowed in, being having access? And if you are vocal about removing that for others, how would you then feel if it was removed for you?
Say the full thing and say it with your chest.
With your chest. And I don't want to be, honestly, I vacillate between there are some days where I don't intend to be combative or anything like that. And it's not to beat people over the head with, why don't you believe this? And I'm shaking my fist at you. I don't intend to do that. I do want to meet people where they are and have honest conversations. But I'll be honest, that's tiring. It takes a lot to have the energy and the patience to. It feels like in some of those conversations where people are intentionally obtuse, that I have to defend my worthiness. And
listen, because we can make a sharp left right there, but that can go into a cultural stance specific to Black people. When I put it to you this way, I had an executive coach come to me after this group meeting, and it was a white male. I knew he came from an affluent area. He, you know, gave the rundown of the bio, and he asked, and it took me off guard. He said, do you feel like you have to overcompensate for all of the identities you represent? I paused and I said, I do, especially in the tech space, which we're both in, you know, you in cybersecurity, myself in AI. And I said, I do, because there are some preconceived notions set by, you know, a certain population that have the majority. And so they can set the quote unquote standard. And it does come from a very myopic view. And they are the ones that have the privilege of saying, we don't want diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. So, you know, it's not enough to just come in as yourself. It's let me layer all of my accomplishments and then some. And one of the statements that were made, and we'll just leave it out in the open, was on meritocracy and how that would be the great equalizer. And I'm like, when it pertains to people with disabilities, we'll just leave it at, you know, I'll leave it at the disabilities and, you know, let you talk on the other end. Meritocracy is fine when everybody has the equal opportunity for their whole selves to be put forth into the job. I can do a job very well with an accommodation, a reasonable accommodation. You remove that, of course I'm unable to do the job, but that's all we're asking. And quite frank, marginalized communities, specifically the disabled community, is the largest population as far as marginalized groups, majority groups. So, you know, this whole notion of them doing away with it. Yeah. Did you forget about the vets? You know, it's, You got kids. 1 in 4 Americans has a disability. 1 in 5 individuals globally has a disability. As we age, we'll get a disability. There's temporary disabilities like breaking an arm or a leg. They're circumstantial, like being pregnant. Nobody really thinks of the full spectrum of what that looks like until it happens. And then you're, you know, everybody's asking for reasonable accommodations. So that's just my little soapbox sermon. Yeah, I get fired up when we talk about stuff like this. Hence the reason why I said, screw this. So
yeah. And then I came in with the Phillips head. yeah, this is life. I vacillate again between throwing my hands up and being like, it is what it is. I can't change people's minds. Well, giving people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they have false information that they've been running with. That's what they've been operating from. And if they ever see the light and if they ever get clarity, then they'll change their ways. But then there are some people who are intentionally ignorant. No, this is what I hear. This is what I believe. I'm not going to entertain any other argument. And it's trying to find the balance, right? Because I also don't want to meet the people who would benefit from conversation, who would benefit from just talking through things with the cynicism of the other people who refuse to at least even have a conversation, let alone potentially change your mind or what have you. Because then that's not fair too, right? I don't want to inflict what I've experienced, especially in a negative connotation. There are some people, you know, in IT, it's been a predominantly not me field. And
That's a very
so,
good way of putting it.
right. And so when I show up, people have some preconceived notions, and or they've experienced, they've had one, they've hired one woman previously, and that person was shoehorned in there. You use shoehorn a lot now, it rolls around in my head. And it didn't work out well because that person wasn't set up for success. They were just hired so they could check a box. And so then now it's like, well, the last woman we hired one didn't work out, so you're probably gonna be the same. And it's like, how fair is that? How many in the history of your organization, how many people have you hired? And if other people that you've hired, how many people have you let go or have left or whatever? Do you look at everyone the same way? We tried hiring a guy one time and he left. So he left. Let me think of Christina from Diary of a Mad Black Woman. Anyway, no, that wasn't Diary of a Mad Black. Was that one? Or is it I Can Do Bad by Myself? That's inconsequential.
I am
One of
not
those movies.
knowledgeable in TP Tyler Perry film
Well,
trivia.
that part specifically is iconic because he was like, Christina left. And so when she said it. Anyway, who have left organizations and they don't lump everyone into the same boat or bowl. It's like, hey, are we going to hire anyone for HR? We had an HR executive before and they didn't work out. So we're not going to hire any other folks in HR.
That mindset right there, you see that in data now. Like Amazon had built an entire AI platform for their HR applications and stopped it. Glad they did, because a lot of their data was trained off of previous hires. Well, what was the problem with that? They were pretty much not even looking at female candidates because all of the data reflected white males in those roles. And they didn't realize it until much later, where it's like, where are all the women at? Where are the people of color? And they were like, oh, our data was trained off of that. This is what we're facing, what we're dealing with now, and why it is important to have diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, because now it's the gatekeepers. You're keeping away really great talent, but we have a history of doing that. And now it's being revealed in our numbers. So yeah, in IT, as a woman in IT, specifically in cybersecurity, have you, well, we know you've experienced it, but does any stories kind of like pop out in your head that really was kind of your pivotal moment of, okay, I am ticked off. You know, this cannot stand. I have to do something. I have to, you know, be more active in my community or whatever that caused you to kind of go forth with passion, basically.
So the truth of the matter is, in my career, I've been pretty blessed overall to not have experienced as many untoward situations in regards to race, gender, etc. But I have been raised with empathy and with caring and concern, and it's not just a if I feel it, then I care, which I feel like too many people think that way. And again, trying to give people the benefit of the doubt, and maybe they can evolve. But we are a community. Choose which one, right? I'm in a community of women, a community of Black people. I'm a community of immigrants, of Caribbean people. And then in the literal community that I live in my city, in my state, in my country, in the world, right? There are so many different opportunities for us to connect with each other and care about each other. And I think we kind of hit on this before of how we used to have a village mindset. Of everyone has their role to play. We're doing what we can to support the overall group. And it has become increasingly individualistic, I guess, except until when someone needs something or they are directly impacted by something, then it's like, oh, wait, where's the village?
Where's my village at?
Right. And I saw on Instagram, this lady said, in order to have a village, you need to be a villager. And it's always the
Simple
simple
enough.
thing, huh?
Yeah, just simple enough. Just
Right, simple
lay it out.
enough. Nothing, you know, overcomplicated or anything like that. And it's like, what are you doing for your part? So, have I had experiences? Yes. Thankfully, they've been few and far between for the most part. And I say that, I think it's necessary to say that because I was actually just telling someone how we should be as balanced and transparent in the stories we tell, in the situations or whatever, so that people can plan accordingly, can operate accordingly, right? I don't want to say, don't go outside, it's fire and brimstone. And it's like, okay, well, to the right, but if you go to the left, you might avoid it, you know? Or the whole world isn't on fire, even though it feels that way. Because if it's always just negative, if it's only negative that you've seen, I'm not faulting you for sharing that. By all means, your experience is your experience. But then we should let people know that there is some glimmer of hope. There is some kindness in the world as well to help balance it, and hopefully not give up hope and have the energy to continue to do what they're doing. Anyway, what I have seen, and we'll probably circle back to a personal anecdote or story if it comes up organically, but for a lot of the people that I was talking to, they did not have the same experience that I did. They were people who were continually condescending. While I got it in drips and drabs, they were people who got it in barrages and
A
onslaught.
deluge of
Right. And there's the microaggressions of the, oh, now that part I can definitely speak to. Oh, you speak so well.
can I touch your hair?
Listen, now I'm not going to say that's why I started wrapping my head, but I feel like that probably informed it some.
I just feel like the oh, you know, why are you angry? I am not angry. I am angry now because you keep asking me why I'm not, you know, angry, but microaggression. Again, as we always say, could be a whole episode in itself, but that's
See,
neither
but
here
even
nor there.
with the why are you angry? All of the like Miss Rachel or TV shows like that for the children, they're like, it's okay for you to have emotions. I'm pretty
Big
sure it's not Miss
emotions.
Rachel or whatever. It's in the other one. You can have big emotions, right? And then you deal with it. Am I not entitled to my emotions? Now, that doesn't mean that I want to walk around all fee fi fo fum and yelling at everyone all the time. That's not justified. I'm not petitioning or saying that I should be able to do that, but I think I have the right to be angry when the situation calls for it. Do I not? Am I three-fifths? Do I only get some of the experience of humanity instead of the full gamut? And so part of the reason, and I know there'll be a part when we pull up some stats and there are specific things you want to pull up, but part of the reason why so many women, and this one is across the board, women in general, have health issues is because they bottle up so much. And I feel that behind my eyes, like the emotion building now. It's
Let
like,
it out, sister.
see, but then it's like, y'all are so emotional. I can still
I
moderate
can cry and
emotion,
function. Don't get it twisted. You
right?
need the work done with
Listen, and
tears.
still do it. Wipe the tears and keep on moving.
Girl.
But to, I was speaking to a neurodivergent person the other day, and she was like, and the term that they use is mask, you know, to have to mask and say, okay, well, I can't be this part of me in this scenario, or I don't know, it just feels like always having to act. And it's fine in some situations, I guess, but all the time, girl, like I can't ever just be. And since I mentioned masking, I want to get like the actual definition. It says masking refers to the act of hiding or suppressing behaviors, emotions, or traits that one feels are not socially acceptable or that might lead to negative consequences. Here's the thing about this topic. As evidence, I think I bounce around a bit, and it's because it is personal to me. I grew up thinking, really believing the whole respectability thing. Like, if I'm just good enough, right? If I'm smart enough, if I'm whatever, then it'll be fine. People will care. People will respect. There will be room at the table, will be made. I don't have to ask for it. The chair will be there because I've done all the things. I've checked all the boxes. That part of the Super Bowl when Samuel L., because people like Samuel, Sam L. Jackson said, oh, no. Don't be too black. Don't be too ghetto, you know? And I hate that I internalized that. And almost myself was a perpetrator on other black people, like, turn that down, turn it down. You know, don't laugh too loud. Don't do that. They're looking. You know, let's color within the lines. Because we don't want to go back, and we want to show them that we're this and we're this and we're this. And kind of circles back to the Viola Davis thing. Like, all along, I was enough. Who knew? And so that's why the conversation is extra triggering. I feel like is overused, but that's, I feel like it's triggering for me, depending on
It
the state that I'm in, because it's like, so, but I did what you told me that I needed to do. I go out of my way to bring people in. And the same people I'm going out of my way to bring in are now telling me, you get out.
is. Yeah.
It's unfortunate. And I'm angry, which I feel like I have the right to be. But honestly, I'm hurt because I believe in the American dream. I believe in the things that we tell people and who we said we are. I'll put it that way. Not who we've been, but who we've claimed to be. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. It shouldn't just be men, but all people are equal. Equal equity. I mean, so do we not really believe that? All the time we put our hands over our heart through grade school and all those other things. That's, it's like finding out someone that you love is a completely different person. And it's heartbreaking for me.
It's hard to walk out of your home and have to switch in order to just make a living, to not get harmed because you are yourself, depending on who you encounter in your day. For men of color, that is a different beast. Any domain you put a person of color, and we'll just stick within that, they're having to switch to just make it. You know, in healthcare, to get the right information so you can take care of yourself, we're having to switch. In work, we're having to switch. In schools, you know, you can go across and not learn this in just zip codes within Dallas alone, depending on where you are, depending on, you know, how many, you know, children of color is in that school. Can really determine the quality of education you get. And that goes up into the job that you can get, how well you can, you know, support your families and so forth. It is hard to be anything outside of white in America. And I know that's really hard to digest across the board. And it's, you know, almost, you know, we keep saying the same things, but it's kind of coming back up now. Like, I'm hearing people that grew up in the 50s and 60s kind of tell the young heads, the young bulls, we faced this before. You'll be fine. We'll get through it. And I'm like, that's still disheartening. I know y'all got through it. Why we gotta go through it? Like, I get it, but why? You know, like, why is history repeating itself? Did we not learn? But it's all the everything is kind of, I think, building up. I find it no coincidence that it's landing in Mental Health Awareness Month in May. I'm starting to see temperatures rise with people. You know, this conversation was emotionally charged. I am seeing it, you know, outside of here, encounters that I've had, you know, within the last week. I'm seeing it, and I don't want to sit back and see what will happen. I'm just trying to stay in the conversation and also maintain, you know, my mental health. But I know something needs to be done. I'm trying to figure what that is, you know, figure out what that is myself, what that looks like for, you know, my niece and my nephew, which, you know, they are babies, but what does this life look like for them? In 20, you know, 10, 20 years from now, will my niece be facing the same issues that I am today? You know, will my nephew have to, you know, change who he is, how, You know, he talks in order to, you know, progress in America. It can be disheartening, or it can, you know, be the cause, be the catalyst, you know, for somebody to kind of get in the game and try to change what that future might look like for our kids and things of that nature. So.
One quick thing. So you mentioned it could be hard out here. I would say for a pimp. That true. I wouldn't know.
Hard out here for.
That's how the song goes. I don't sing it, you know. For us. And you said for anyone who is not white. That is not to say that white people do not have challenges, that life is easy for them, right? The
Right.
thing is, at the true heart and nature of diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, accessibility, whichever one of those acronyms you use, it's to benefit all. It's the rising tide lifts all ships. Yes, we're speaking to our experience because it's our experience. That's speaking to what we know and how we feel, but that does not mean that it is limited to just us, right? And that's the
Right.
part that's been infuriating is that if I know that my life has not been without its struggles, right? I can't relate to Tiffany's experience as a woman with a disability, but I can still respect it, and I still want her to be able to fully participate in meetings, in life, in whatever. Maybe not meetings, girl. I don't wish that for you. But you know what I'm saying? Still, just because I don't have her exact experience, it doesn't mean that I won't advocate for her to be able to participate and interact with the world as seamlessly as possible. And me doing that does not negate or trivialize my experience. It's just understanding that other people have different experiences, and I want all of us to have as equitable of a life as possible. And what makes it triggering is that for the fact that some people have made DEI synonymous with the Black experience, and then because it's synonymous with that, then that makes it a little bit more palatable to cast aside or do away with. So that's as far as for me and my response. That has been the part that's been extra discouraging, but it's not to say that other folks, other groups, other backgrounds, other whatever, don't benefit from these initiatives as well. And I don't know if we've talked about it here, but I know that we've talked about it before, the curb cut effect. Tiffany, if you want to talk to that.
Man. You know, and before I talk about the curb, I was about to say something. So when you were talking about, you know, being that I have a disability and you didn't, but still understanding and having that empathy, I was like, well, you know, your experience as someone that is an immigrant, and I paused, I said, we're all immigrants in America. Like, we are not native here, you know, outside of our, you know, indigenous people, but like we all have that particular experience. So that's neither here nor there again. But you know, it's just, I think just taking the time, pausing and thinking about one's experience, you can relate to it at some point or have some empathy and understanding about it. But no, the curb cut effect, we've all have walked on sidewalks or used a wheelchair for you know, a sidewalk. There is a divot in the corner of every sidewalk. It is originally meant for people that use wheelchairs. However, because we all use it, whether we have luggage that we are carrying or using a dolly or parents that have their children in strollers, we all use that curb cut. And why that is so significant is because this was created for people with disabilities, primarily people that utilize wheelchairs, but we all benefit from it. That is what true accessibility is. You are like, well, how does that apply to me? Well, if you are in a noisy place, like an airport, and you're watching something on the screen, you will notice that they have closed captioning. That is for the deaf community, but you benefit from it as a person who has their hearing. Same thing, you know, in other areas, we're all using speech to text now. You know, if you're driving, you shouldn't be texting while driving, but if you are and you're using speech to text to respond back to somebody, you are using something that is meant for somebody within the disability community. And so it was so funny. I was hearing about a car manufacturer and they were saying that the shock absorbent technology that they were using for a truck was in that particular manufacturer was created by somebody who had back injuries. But I'm like, everybody likes a smooth drive. But that's accessibility. That's the essence of what it is once it helps somebody, within our population group with a disability, it can help everybody. And it's not that it is a very good thing to do, and that should be it. But for those that are trying, our capitalistic friends, it does make for good business. You want products and services that are open to everybody. You want a labor force that is diverse, because I believe Accenture came out with a report that talked about having diverse companies and how much more lucrative they were, because you are having people behind the technology or behind the product and service that are building it that actually reflect the consumers that are using it. It just makes good sense and sense. But it can get tiresome trying to be the evangelist for it when it's just like the proof is in the pudding. But it just kind of goes back to what you said before. It gets exhausting to kind of show the benefits when people just are really kind of set in their world and won't open that up to possibilities, to different opinions. That's why the bipartisanship is so important, because once we have diverse opinions and lived experiences in one place, we come up with better outcomes. It shouldn't, life is not monolithic. It's not one-dimensional. It should have other opposing ideas, but opposition with empathy, opposition with compassion, opposition with understanding, so that we are building something better than, just this one-dimensional, aspect of it. So this has been a pod of soapbox sermon. So,
Step right
but
up. Let me tell you something. Okay, I think we gave real world application. What are some more stats? I know you had a specific tool you wanted to leverage. Let's pivot to that.
So one tool that I want to use is Perplexity. It is another generative AI tool that's out there. I keep saying tool, but I primarily use it for just research. It pulls from a lot of data resources. I will say that it is kind of getting some backlash. It is a tool that pulls from different learning models and so forth, and trying to credit that information to the right source and make sure that they are getting their dues and everything like that. But I believe all of that, it'll be worked out. Just a little mental note, one of the conversations that I kept hearing and very curious when it pertains to these tools we're using within AI is, where's the balance between innovation and regulation? And I thought that was really, really, something I wanted to sink my teeth into. But that's just something to keep in mind when we are all utilizing these AI tools, is that regulation is important, but we have to find that balance. We have to have the freedom to create new tools and let this technology kind of breathe, so that we can kind of push it to its limits and get as creative as we can be. But we do need guardrails. Cybersecurity is important. It is for us, and we don't want to limit that creativity and that innovation, but we do need to protect the people that it's for. I digress. I am using the voice feature for Perplexity, and we're going to do a live demo.
That was a welcome digression because,
Okay.
excuse me, I want us to innovate and learn and have cool things, but I also don't want to live in Terminator or iRobot.
But and we will, we'll dive into the importance of cybersecurity, which we all need to learn. But here's the live demo. So, can you give us stats on people of color in the tech space, as well as women in the tech space, as well as professionals with disabilities in the tech space?
In the tech space, diversity statistics highlight underrepresentation. For people of color, only about 6% of computing and math-related jobs are held by Black and Latina people, and Black individuals represent only 7% of the computing workforce. When it comes to women, they hold about 27.6% of technology jobs, with a much lower percentage in leadership roles. For professionals with disabilities, they make up about 11% of tech specialists in the UK and 11% of the global AWS community. These figures underscore the ongoing need for greater diversity and inclusion efforts in the tech industry.
What are some solutions that you propose that we do as an entire population in order to remedy that issue?
To address the lack of diversity in tech, we can take several steps. First, improving access to STEM education for underrepresented groups is crucial. This includes offering scholarships, mentorship programs, and early exposure to tech fields. Second, companies should implement unbiased hiring practices and create inclusive work environments. Third, promoting diverse leadership and providing career advancement opportunities for women, people of color, and those with disabilities can help. Lastly, fostering a culture of inclusion and belonging through training and open dialogue is key to retaining diverse talent.
Okay, so that is from the machine itself saying as far as what we need to do to get more people in tech. So how do you feel about that?
Well, one, can you reiterate what platform you just used and what that was like?
So I use Perplexity and I use the voice feature where instead of typing out my prompt, I spoke to it. I use that pretty much for all of my tools now as far as apps. ChatGPT has a really good one. It's, to me, more realistic. They've been doing a lot in their NLP, natural language processing. And so that flows more like a conversation with a real person than the one that you have with Perplexity. A little bit more robotic and rigid. But if you are just coming up with creative ideas, want to, you know, use a soundboard, ChatGPT is really great for that. But like I said, if you are looking to get some stats, do a little bit more research, I would lean more into Perplexity.
And it didn't sound like it was that perplexed for you to use.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Thank you. But how do I feel about what it stated? Everything that was said, I am aware of and have been part of my talking points whenever I go to an event and am representative of Black Girls Hack and people ask, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? A lot of those stats are shared. And yeah, it helps me build the case. It's like, hey, guys, I'm not making this up.
The machine said it.
No. According to the machine. And computers don't lie. What do they say? Computers don't make mistakes. Humans do. They do hallucinate, though. Computers do.
I say, yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. I don't want to bogart the conversation and talk about BGH, but it speaks to all those different things. Our three tenets are to educate, empower, and prepare. For those who aren't familiar with BGH, Black Girls Hack, it is a nonprofit training organization that seeks to do exactly the follow-up question that Tiffany asked. How do we remedy the disparity in the tech field? What are the active things that we can do? Because we can complain. We can vent. I'm going to say complain because that has a negative connotation as though you're not doing anything about it. We sit there and wring hands and say, hey, it's not fair. It's not this or whatever. Okay, that's true. Now what? Oh, actually, something I heard this week during RSA, and again, it's the simple things that move me because it doesn't always have to be super complex. But he was like, when you're making your case or your pitch to leadership, whoever, you have to include the what, the so what, and the now what. And right? That's just bing, bang, boom. Everything, bing, bop, boop, bam. Anyway, it's so digestible and it's really good about summarizing what all you need to do. And it's like, okay, so we talked about a lot of our complaints, sore spots, and the truth as we see it and have felt it with DEI A and B initiatives and the state of it. So that's the what, okay? Then the so what is, why does this matter? Listen, as you said, we touched on from the personal aspect as to how we feel impacted and everything else like that. But you also mentioned from a organizational standpoint, if you're from a capitalistic standpoint, there's money to be made. Like, if that's all you care about, there's still meat on the bone for you. Okay. So that's the, and I guess the so what would depend on the audience as to what matters to them. There are some organizations that do care about social impact. They do care about the people that they serve. And that in and of itself is enough of an argument. But for those who don't and just need to know how it affects their bottom line, it does. And then the now what is, I heard what you have to say. I'm on board now. Let's do what we can to help remedy this. What do we do? So that's where organizations like ours, BGH, steps in. It's like, hey, for our educate, empower, and prepare, we want to provide training resources and not want to, as I say, try I heard Yoda in my head, do or do not, there is no try. Or actually, he'd be like, do or do not, there is no try. That was more like Maya Angelou.
Yoda and my head.
Lou.
Ah, wow.
And May 4th is
Wow.
upon us.
May
So,
the force be with you.
and also with you. But anyway, we that's one of the misnomers or misunderstandings I think about DEI, and some of it is intentional, and some is they've heard it parroted. It's like folks who believe in DEI just want unqualified people to get the position and not qualify people out. No. It's that we want to expand the pool so that all the qualified people can apply. So it's not to say that just because you hire, and even that I think is offensive to say that, oh, I hired me a black, so they obviously weren't qualified for this role. And now that is something that I have heard in a work experience before, where someone was lauding themselves and patting themselves on the back because they took a risk and they took a chance and they hired an Asian woman, they hired this black man, and they were like, so like they were the an astronaut going some bold frontier, and they took a chance at these people. And I was like, but they're so qualified. And what was interesting is that everyone who interacted with those people that they hired were like, hey, they've been Johnny on the spot. They've been getting this done. They've been doing that together. And then they're like, oh yeah, who knew, huh? Who knew that there are other qualified people? I won't belabor that point. Anyway, we do believe in giving people the resources and the skills they need to be successful. We don't want to get people in positions just to leave them there. We want to make sure that they are as best prepared with the knowledge and opportunity, the resources and skills they need to be successful. So that's where the education part comes in. And that presents itself in cohorts, trainings, discounts on vouchers, or in some situations, free vouchers, so that the cost, which sometimes is prohibitive, is not something that is a barrier to entry. And then the empower part is that there are so many people who will do all of the work. And this might sound like a little bit of shade. It is direct. I have a co-host who is phenomenally intelligent and capable, but will still second guess their capability. Like, not all the way, because it's interesting how that vacillates, because you're also super confident and will shoot the shot. But
I'm
they're
complex.
so, what was that?
I'm
A
complex.
complex human being, indeed. An onion, if you will, layers. But you're not alone in that, because, and I'm interested to know what Perplexity thinks about that. There are so many women where if they go to apply for a job and there are 10 requirements, if they don't check every one of the 10 boxes, they won't apply. Whereas male counterparts would be like, ayo, I got a smooth five or six.
That'll do.
It'll do, right? And so that's where the empower part comes in. Remind them who you are. When I went for an interview and I was second guessing myself, and I was like, I don't know. I might not be. And I know I did this, and I know that I did that. And our founder was like, she took the opportunity to remind me who I was. And we do that not just for each other, but for the squad overall. And so it's like, you have done the work. Remember that you've done the work. You are capable. Shoot the shot. Don't be the first person to give yourself a no. And that's one of our taglines, shoot all shots. And then the last is prepare. Let people know what they're going into. Give as fair and transparent a view into what the field is. That's why even here, when we talk about, what it's like to be a woman in tech, in cybersecurity, with whatever, there are highs and lows. There are ebbs and flows. That rhymed. I didn't even do it on purpose. But I think it's necessary to let people know about that so they can plan accordingly. There are seasons. Sometimes there are winter seasons. It's cold. Wear a snuggie, you know? Do people still wear those? I don't know.
I
Either
have
way,
no idea.
bundle up, you know? But then there's also spring. There are times to celebrate. There are things, there is joy out there. It's not all grim, but it's also not all sunshine and rainbows. And I think if you don't prepare people for that, the first time there's a cold day or it rains, they quit, because they're like, this is a person who I'd been following or aspiring to be like, and this wasn't their experience. So something must be wrong with me. Something must be wrong with the weather system. Whoever's controlling the climate took a day off or whatever. But the truth of the matter is, if you know what to expect, you know what things are coming, then I think we're more likely to have people stay in the field instead of just enter it and leave. But that was my long-winded response as to how I feel about that.
The one thing, and this goes great into our next segment, is you said just take the shot. People that are taking the shot, this is our fun segment, Straight BS. No, not that BS, but straight Blind Spot, where we like to highlight whether that's a service, a product, or an organization that is really making their mark and doing their thing. And we just want to bring it out to the light. An organization that is near and dear to my heart is The Prospector. They are located in Richfield, Connecticut. My husband is from the area, and I actually have friends out there. Last year, we went out there to the Prospector Theater. And what was so incredible about this theater is that they employed people with disabilities, and they were in all different areas of the theater. You had them at the front that were greeters. You had them behind the concession stands. You had them working the machines, you know, with the film and all of that. You had them creating posters, creating those commercials that we watch in the beginning, you know, where you want to get in. It was, and I'm not saying incredible because these are people with disabilities doing the job. That wasn't the incredible part. The incredible part was the visionary Val, how much she put into that place. And I got to take a tour. I used my Facebook Meta glasses, which was so dope because it explained all of these intricacies of the theater. They have this remarkable chandelier made out of things that are like non-existent now. So the Beetle, there's like an actual Beetle, the car, in this chandelier, but these are all things that are quote unquote discarded that made this beautiful piece of art. And I know it's beautiful because that's what my Facebook glasses said. Mm-hmm. And they have like a cool area where the bar is. And it is nothing but thousands of pennies with, you know, you have heads of tails. All of the heads are facing you. As you look up, they are pinned to the ceiling. And the purpose behind that is when you look up, they want all of their prospectors to keep their heads up when they go through this area. And I was like, the detail. They have an entire wall that is very tactile. You can feel it. And within the wall, they have these gold medals from the Paralympics that were donated that are embedded in this wall, and you can feel them. The place is just amazing, and they play all of these films, and they play Disney films, and I was like, bet. When I come out here, that's what I'm doing. They have all of these special events, and the staff, I just love them all. They are my friends, and the cool thing about it, not only do they have the Prospector Theater, but they also create gourmet popcorn, and they have become the non-official, official popcorn of the pod. I keep trying to get some over there to Rebecca, but somehow they keep disappearing.
Curious.
It's so good. And I'm not just saying that, y'all. It really is good. They have this Belgium chocolate popcorn that I will eat in just one sitting. Everybody, you know, that's there, their staff that, you know, creates just the delicious popcorn, they have a disability and they are creating equal opportunities within job employment. One thing that I have said in many talks that I do is like, we don't need sympathy. We need jobs just like everybody else. It is not a handout. It is a hand up. We have families just like you all, like, and I hate saying that it's kind of like, you know, we need it too, but we just need jobs. That's it. We just want to work. That's it. And this organization has created a safe place for us to go and do things and be in a business that we absolutely love. It's a great way for their creative expression to be seen and shown and highlighted. And my friend Munchie, Mike Santini, I call him Munchie, but he's out there. And recently I became part of their board of advisors. And so I'm excited about that role. But I did want to highlight them and encourage everybody, if you're in the area, go see a movie, get the popcorn. You know, it's great. It makes a great gift for your administrators, for your boss. You know, if you just want a cool Christmas gift or any type of cool treat, you want to be different and kind of show off, you know, your gift skills, I would encourage everybody to get it. You have a URL for us?
Yes. So I was going to say that folks can also order online some of the popcorn. It's prospectorpopcorn.org. And I'll also post it in the show notes. On their mission page, it says improving the quality of life for people with disabilities through meaningful employment. Underemployment, it says, with 75% of us self-identifying with a disability, we continue to show the world the value we add to the workforce by producing exceptional handmade gourmet popcorn. We debunk stereotypes and showcase our sparkle. A person's passion is what we call sparkle. And our job is to match match that passion with a profession. We provide pink glove service, going above and beyond in every aspect of our operation, whether enjoying a movie or savoring our gourmet popcorn. We want every experience to be memorable and filled with sparkle. I like that. Sparkle on.
They're dope. So wanted to highlight them. And it just fits so well within our DEIA conversation. We're going to end the show as we always do with our fun dad joke.
I hate dad jokes. Dads are the only ones who have fun. I don't have a child at all. Can I be a fun aunt joke?
What are we going to call?
I don't know. It's not that deep. Carry on with the dad joke.
What is the favorite snack of a chief information security officer?
I don't know, Tiffany. What's that?
Bam.
My gosh. My gosh, I wouldn't have guessed that, because who is snacking on spam? Could you imagine someone sitting at their desk and they just pulled the tin can out? Is it still in tin? Back when I ate it.
No idea.
Let me see.
There's more. There's
more. Oh, there's, but wait, there's more.
There's more. What is their favorite pastime?
What?
Fishing.
Listen. Hey.
There's more.
Okay, I don't know if I can handle more. Let's go. Let's hear it.
Their favorite college team mascot.
What?
The Trojans.
Okay.
Those are my cybersecurity jokes.
That was, mm-hmm. Do you have any more? Any?
No.
Okay. Else, I'm grateful for the joy that it brought you. Okay. I am happy that you are happy, my friend.
Gosh, they're so awful, but they're so great.
Oh, gosh. And I did just do a quick Google on spam, and it specifically says canned meat. So I guess they still can it.
They're actually like a delicacy in Hawaii. So there's that.
Yeah, there is that.
But yeah. We hope you have a great week. Take care of your mental health. Just for May.
But. Everybody hurts, but everybody can, you know, also smile again. And thank you for spending this time with us. Hopefully it brought you some insight and some joy. Either you were laughing with Tiffany or at her, but either way, she elicited some laughter. So thank you.
Thank you. Sparkle on.
Sparkle on.